Welcome to Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Want to connect with Howie? Email him at howie@israelnewstalkradio.com. Now here's your host, Howie Silberger.
Imagine living in a world where your community could be attacked 27 times in 1 week. Attacks like firebombings of your places of worship. Attacks like shootings of your school. Your community members being beaten in the streets. Graffiti on the walls calling for your annihilation, for the genocide of your people. School buses attacked. All in the course of a week, 27 attacks. A barber cutting the sideburns off a young child's face. The Jewish community is living through that and continues to live through that in North America. 27 attacks just in just the past week against Jews in North America. I'm sorry, it's 26 in North America, one in Zurich. Two synagogues defaced and attacked. Anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish graffiti on the walls around Jewish institutions and where Jews hang out. There was another anti-Jewish attack in Australia this week, where the home of the country's largest Jewish population, a Jewish home, was bombed. And the world stands silent. The world is quiet. There's no outrage. Nobody cares. What's amazing to me, and what's totally baffling to me, is that if this happened to any other community, aside from the Jewish community, there would be riots in the streets. People would be screaming and yelling for politicians to find a solution. Vigilante groups would rise up and say, we're not going to take this. This is not an acceptable situation for us or for anybody. Leftist human rights organizations would be screaming and yelling, how dare somebody attack a community like that? How dare these poor people are living in fear? How dare in a civilized Western society this could happen to some people living there? If any other community had to live through these kind of attacks and had to live in the fear that the Jewish community lives in, the entire world would be up in arms. Just remember, just a couple of years ago, there was an incident where a fentanyl-ingested man, a man who was overdosing on fentanyl, was beaten by the police. And that resulted in 3 months of riots in the streets and destruction and death of people protesting the attack on George Floyd. 3 months of riots in the streets saying, we're not going to take this anymore. It's enough. Yet 27 attacks on the Jewish community in a week around the world. 27 attacks. And not a whisper, not a whimper. Human rights organizations are unbelievably quiet. How is this possible? Are Jews subhuman? It seems that that's the case. That the world is viewing the Jews, much like the world viewed the Jews in the 1940s, as subhuman, as expendable, as guests, as pests, as rodents that have to be exterminated. In Toronto, Ontario, the Chaim Mushka School, the Lubavitch School in Toronto, Ontario, has been shot at 3 times in 14 months. Thank God nobody's been injured. Thank God the school's been closed each time that the shootings have happened, and it's only been building damage. But what psychological toll does it take on the students in the building, on the staff, on the community, on the greater Toronto community? In Montreal, a synagogue and a Federation building were bombed this week. Sure, there was nobody in the buildings when they were bombed. But that doesn't mean that a bombing can't happen when people aren't praying, when things are happening. As they did in Australia just 2 weeks ago, where an anti-Jewish mob set a building on fire where Jews were actually praying in the building when the building was set on fire, just a couple of days after Kristallnacht, after the anniversary of Kristallnacht, where Jews were set on fire in a building while they were praying. And people yell at me all the time. They say, Howie, how could you compare today's situation to what happened in the 40s? Nothing is comparable to Nazism. And I used to agree with that. I used to say, you're right. There's nothing that's as evil as Nazism. And the situation in North America is not the same as the situation was in Europe in the 1930s and 40s. I used to agree with that. But now, not so much. Now, I'm starting to think that we are heading back in the direction of a Holocaust. And I hate to say it. And I'm normally not a conspiracy theorist, and I normally don't buy into these kind of fear-mongering statements. But 27 attacks on the Jewish community, and not a sound, a peep, not an expression of disgust or of concern from any government official, not an expression or concern from any community leader, makes me wonder if we're not heading back in that direction. Jewish community leaders are sleeping on their laurels. They're asleep. They're in comatose. Where are the Jewish community leaders screaming and yelling, this is unacceptable? Where are the Jewish politicians screaming and yelling, this is unacceptable? Sure, sending out a tweet saying, I condemn this, doesn't actually condemn it. It's just lip service. Where's practical action to make this stop? Anywhere in the world. And of course, the Jew haters are laughing at us. They're just laughing at the Jews. They're saying, hey, look, we are expressing ourselves. We are showing you that we want to kill you. We are sending you clear messages. We're burning down your synagogues with people in them. We're sending you clear messages that you are no longer welcome in our countries. We are sending you clear messages that we want to murder you. And you are sitting quietly and accepting it. So, hey, you know, if you don't want to fight back, then we're going to do what we want to do. That's basically what they're saying. And so that results in 27 attacks on the Jewish community in a week. Let's take a look at some of the attacks, just because we can. There's so many of them. I don't know, we know which one to choose first. So let's just choose one at random here. A Jewish student was reportedly punched in the face at Columbia University during a pro-Israel rally. Okay, that happens. You know, things get tense, that happens. But the second half of that sentence is, and you know, this is what media does, they cut the sentence there and they say, oh, well, you know, that's normal. They were at a rally and, you know, tensions are high. That happens. But the second half of the sentence is, a Jewish student was reportedly punched in the face at a Columbia rally, a Columbia University rally last night, and was told that the final solution is coming to him. Oh, 1 second. Whoa. The final solution. Where did we hear that before? Oh, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, wasn't the cafe owner at the Jewish General Hospital screaming that at a rally in Montreal? We spoke about that a few weeks ago, where the cafe owner at a Jewish hospital, the kosher Jewish hospital, the person who owned three cafes in the kosher Jewish hospital, was yelling at Jews that the final solution was coming to them. This is the person who controls food in a Jewish hospital. Thank God the hospital and the cafe shops threw her out and she's been arrested. But yeah, how about that? The mother of an 11-year-old boy says that she told the barber not to touch his side locks, to which he nodded in agreement. Moments later, he cut them off. The distraught mother and the son left the barber shop in tears. The mother said that the kid could not go to school the next day because of the shame and embarrassment he felt because his side locks were cut off. This happened in New Jersey. The New York Police Department is searching for a suspect in connection to a hate crime that occurred on November 5th, is asking the public for assistance in identifying and finding suspects. Footage of the crime shows somebody at the Tamar Devora School on 9th Avenue, an unidentified individual can see shouting anti-Jewish statements before kicking the door of one of the school's parked buses and shattering the glass, causing approximately $350 worth of damage. The suspect could then be seen fleeing. Let's go to Pittsburgh, where a Riverwalk trail, where Jews go on Saturday afternoon, on Shabbos, they go for a walk on the river. A Riverwalk trail had been spray painted with graffiti that said, "Kill the Jews, gas the Jews, and swastikas." Swastikas were also spray painted on the Temple Israel in Minneapolis. And another reminder that Jews are not welcome anywhere in North America. Police are reporting also swastika graffiti in Chelmsford, New Jersey. And, of course, we have two days before Hanukkah, just a few days before Hanukkah, we have a firebombing in Montreal, where a synagogue and the United Federation buildings were firebombed. There were Molotov cocktails were thrown into the buildings. And this girls' school in Toronto was shot twice. And there's plenty more on that list. So you could just look up the list. There's plenty more on that list. There's no lack of incidents of Jews being attacked and Jews being shot at and Jews being beaten and Jewish property being destroyed in North America. The land of the free, they say, the home of the brave. Jews don't live in freedom. As much as everyone likes to pretend that in democratic Western societies, people are living in freedom, that's not the case for Jews. Jews are living in captivity. We are slaves to the countries that we live in. And we are bound by, not only by their rules, which everybody's bound by, the laws and the rules of the land, but we're also bound by the hatred of the land. So many different people have told me over the course of the last little while how their kids are afraid to go to school, afraid to go to university, wearing any sign of Judaism on them. I had a conversation with a young man just yesterday who told me that he's going to one of the universities where anti-Jewish sentiments is large and crazy. And he said that he's taking most of his courses online. He can't see himself walking onto campus and facing the daily protests on campus and the daily barrage of anti-Jewish sentiments that are thrown at the Jewish students on campus. He says he pays his tuition. He's a student like everybody else. Yet on campus, he can't be there on campus. He can't survive on campus as a Jew, as an obvious Jew. Spoke to people who tell me that when they go onto the streets, just walking down the streets of any major U.S. city or any major Canadian city, they cover their heads, they put on baseball caps, and they hide anything that's visibly Jewish because they're afraid. And how could they not be afraid when there are 27 attacks on the Jewish community around the world in 1 week? They have every right to be afraid. And the governments of those lands have the obligation to protect their citizenship. They have the obligation to ensure that people walking through the streets of their cities and their towns feel safe, no matter who they are. We hear about the melting pot. We hear about multicultural societies. We hear about minority rights. We hear about this all the time. This is what's the mantra of the left, screaming and yelling that everybody has to be accepted. If you're transgender, if you believe you're a horse, we have to accept your belief that you're a horse. We have to accept that. We have to cater to everyone's whims and everybody's desires and everybody's delusions. Yet, when it comes to Jews, it seems that it's a black hole. It seems that nobody cares. It seems like the Jewish community doesn't matter. They don't fit into the minority rights. They don't fit into the melting pot. They don't fit into the entire multicultural society that the world is trying to create. So when hatred is expressed against the Jewish community, when Jews are the victims, it's irrelevant. Now, we could go backwards a couple of months, we go backwards about a year, October 7th. And I know everyone said, oh, October 7th, how could you keep talking about October 7th? But October 7th was a watershed moment for the Jewish community. The people who were living in the delusion that Jews were accepted in society, people living in the delusion that Jews had melded into Western civilization, whether it be in European civilization or American civilization, had a rude awakening on October 7th. And the months and months and months that followed October 7th last year. October 7th proved beyond a reasonable doubt, and if that is the baseline of proof, of evidence, October 7th proved beyond a reasonable doubt that the hatred expressed against the Jewish community, disguised as anti-Zionist hatred, was actually anti-Jewish hatred. The protest that followed October 7th, the media narrative that changed the victim into the aggressor, was so profound and affected the community so profoundly and affected the entire world Jewish community so profoundly that I think even the crazy leftists that actually believed that Jews had melded into society. And remember, in the 1930s, you had Germans who had totally assimilated into society and were shocked when the Nazis came after them. Hey, I'm more German than I am Nazi. Why are you bothering me? But the Jews that are more American or more Canadian or more British or French or whatever were severely shocked when they realized that the anti-Israel rhetoric, the entire anti-Israel movement, wasn't actually an anti-Israel movement. It was an anti-Jewish movement. That the State of Israel was just being used as a proxy for the Jewish people. And October 7th shattered that illusion. Because if you think about it logically, if you think about it in any sense, in any semblance of logic, you'll realize, and it doesn't take very long for this to happen, the realization to come in, that the attacks on synagogues and Jewish schools, the attacks on Jews walking down the street in New Jersey, the cutting off of the sidewalks of Orthodox Jewish boys in Connecticut, this is all anti-Jewish, not anti-Israel. And if you want to draw the line and say political is political and religious is religious, fine, I have no problem with that. If you want to protest the State of Israel, stand in front of the Israeli embassy and scream at the ambassadors, that's fine with me. If you want to stand against the State of Israel and stand against the policies of the State of Israel, I have no issue with that whatsoever. Everybody has a right to their political opinions. Everybody has the right to disagree with other people's political opinions, and countries have to be held accountable for their actions, and I have no problem if you want to do that. But the complaints and the attacks on Jews in the name of Israel, in the name of Palestine, were against Jews and Jewish institutions, not against Israeli institutions. And that is terrorism. When you attack a civilization of innocent people for political motives, that's the definition of terrorism. And there are no politicians out there that are willing to call this terrorism. No politicians out there are willing to say that this is a concerted effort paid for by many of the leftist organizations to terrorize the Jewish community, to wreak havoc and terror on the Jewish community. Now, how is attacking a synagogue in Toronto or Montreal? How is firebombing a Jewish Federation building? How is shooting up a school in any city going to liberate Palestine? How is that going to help liberate Palestine? If that's the goal of these attacks, if that's the goal of these protests, how is attacking a community going to liberate Palestine that are being allegedly oppressed by the Israelis. Attacking the Jewish community has nothing to do with Israel. Israel does not represent the Jewish community worldwide. And the Jewish community worldwide does not represent Israel. And so attacking the Jewish community is exactly that. It's an anti-Jewish act. It's a hate crime. And it's not a political expression. Attacking a military outpost of the State of Israel, attacking Israeli politicians, attacking the embassy of Israel or the consulates of Israel, that is an attack on the country. Attacking Jews living in Canada, in Toronto, in New York, in Connecticut, New Jersey, in Riyadh, that's an attack on a people. And the two are not related. Even though you want to pretend they are, they're not related. Attacking students on campus is not going to free Palestine. But what it does is terrorizes Jews living in the cities that these people are being attacked on. I know people who are walking, who walk down the street on a Saturday afternoon in neighborhoods that are predominantly Jewish, who are looking over their shoulders because they're afraid of anything that's going to come up behind them. They're afraid of anything that's going to happen. They're afraid that somebody's going to sneak out of the corner and stab them. Now, I know this is the goal of globalizing the Intifada. The whole idea of the Intifada was to terrorize the Israeli population, and it worked. The Intifada worked. It terrorized the Israeli population. The indiscriminate killing and the random attacks on the Jewish people, on the Israeli people during the times of the Intifada in the early 90s and in the late 90s, it worked. It worked, and people were terrorized. People were afraid. And globalizing the Intifada is exactly what's happening. It's random attacks on Jews for a political purpose, which is the definition of terrorism. I repeated it twice. I'll repeat it a third time. But nobody's being charged with terrorism. They're being charged with arson. They're being charged with assault. They're being charged with mischief. I guarantee if they find a person who's shooting up the schools, they're going to be charged with a weapons violation or something crazy like that. Just charging a weapon in public. Some kind of misdemeanor or some kind of lowly charge that's going to get them out of jail in 5-6 years. Nobody's going to be charged with terrorism. And this is exactly what it is, continuous terrorist attacks against the Jewish community. So how do we fix this? How do you fix terrorism against a community? Well, we can't do it as individuals. Individuals can't stop attacks on our community. It's impossible for individuals to do that. But it's not impossible for governments. It's not impossible for the police force to stop it. In Toronto and in Montreal, in Canada, there are weekly pro-Hamas protests. And they're definitely pro-Hamas protests, not pro-Palestine protests. Don't give me a break. They're pro-Hamas protests. In fact, in one protest in Toronto not long ago, they recreated the final moments of Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, right there in the middle of a street in downtown Toronto. In Montreal, they yell, kill the Jews. They yell, globalize the Intifada. They yell, Jews, get out. Go back to where you came from. With impetuity, because they know that the police aren't going to do anything about it. They have injunctions. There are injunctions that have been taken in Montreal against protests in front of religious institutions. In fact, all of Canada has a law prohibiting protests in front of religious institutions, but it doesn't apply to pro-Hamas protesters. Nobody enforces them. The mayor of Montreal says that she believes that these protesters are expressing their opinion, their rightful freedom of expression, she says. And she told the police to stand down. The mayor of Toronto, Olivia Chow, told the police to stand down with a continuous protest on the streets of Toronto in front of the Jewish community of Toronto, blocking the access to the Jewish community of Toronto. There's daily, if not weekly, protests. And the mayor told the police to stand down and just to observe and arrest any Jew that tries to instigate a fight with the protesters. In New York, the police have traditionally stood down when the pro-Hamas protesters have been out there protesting. They said they will investigate crimes, but they can't stop people from the freedom of speech. So let's talk about freedom of speech for a second, because I think it's an important topic to look at. So freedom of speech is the cornerstone, I'm told, of any democracy. This is what democracy is all about. People willing to express their opinion, people having the right to express their opinion. Without the concept of freedom of speech, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today. I wouldn't be able to. This would be an illegal activity. So freedom of speech is extremely important. But like every other freedom that people have, there are limits on freedoms. If there weren't limits on freedoms, I would have the freedom to do anything I wanted. If there weren't laws and rules in society, we would be able to do anything we wanted. So theoretically speaking, if there were no rules or laws, you could basically go out and kill somebody and eat them. It would be perfectly legal. I mean, you know, who'd stop you? Why would they stop you if there are no laws? But we don't do that, and humanity doesn't do that because we've instituted both moral laws, we've instituted societal laws, we've instituted country laws that prohibit people from doing certain activities because they are harmful to other people, they're harmful to themselves. And some of those restrictions include inciting riots, inciting hatred, inciting genocide, which have been embedded in laws right across the lands. Because we've learned from history that unbridled freedom of speech is a recipe for somebody getting killed or somebody creating some kind of army to go and destroy things. And so freedom of speech has been curtailed. In most cases, freedom of speech has been curtailed. Try to get up on a university campus, try to get up anywhere and yell, "Let's re-enslave the blacks." Try to do that anywhere. You'll be arrested. Because that's not appropriate talk. That's not talk that you could do, be allowed to do, and get away with it. The politicians, the community leaders, they would be outraged. There would be riots in the streets. Yet there are imams who run churches right across North America and Europe that get up on a weekly basis in their church and in public at these rallies, these pro-Hamas rallies, and yell for globalizing intifada and yell to destroy and kill the Jews. And they're not arrested. They're allowed to do that. So even with these restrictions on freedom of speech, the only people who are restricted from freedom of speech are the ones who aren't yelling for the killing of Jews. The ones who yell to kill Jews or to hurt Jews or to destroy Jewish property, they're allowed to say whatever they want. And nobody stops them anywhere in the world. Nobody stops them. Now, I'm not being a crybaby. I'm not being a kind of guy who's you know, a victimized guy. I don't feel victimized at all. I actually accept reality. I recognize and I accept reality, because I know that, you know, people are going to say to me, "Oh, you know, you're just playing the victim," but I'm not. There are 27 attacks on the Jewish community in the last week. That's not playing victim. If I go back a week before, there were 40 attacks on the Jewish community a week before. And if I go back a week before that, and if I go back a week before that, it varies between 12 and 40 every single week since October 7th. So am I playing the victim? No. My community is the victim. We're not playing anything. This is not a game. We don't believe in playing games. We understand what's happened to us in the past. And we understand what could happen to us again. There are no games here. It's not a toy. We're not toys. We don't go back into the box at the end of the day. We know. We've lived through it time and time again over centuries. We see the trends. We understand the trends. We understand history. And we've made a decision as a community that we're not going to deal with it anymore, we're not going to put up with it anymore, we're not going to tolerate it anymore. That was the whole mantra of never again after World War II. And we've heard it my entire childhood. It's all I ever heard was people yelling, "Never again, never again, never again," and then allowing it to happen again and again and again. Never again has become an empty promise. We used to believe, our Jewish community leaders, that they were there to protect us. But I become very cynical when it comes to Jewish community leaders. In North America, in Europe, Jewish community leaders are chosen by the size of their pocketbooks, not by their strengths, not by their leadership skills, not by anything else. They're put into leadership positions based on how much money they could donate to the organizations that they are part of. And that, to me, is a corruption of society. That, to me, is a horrific, horrific result of assimilation. Where monetary contributions become the most important thing. And people who could actually help, and people who could actually plan, and people who could actually work to save the Jewish community are ignored. They're pushed aside. They're forgotten. This is the issue that we run into. And this is the way the Jewish community is facing these attacks, these constant attacks. The reaction of the community is not based on defense. It's not based on trying to save the community. It's based on what kind of statement can we make that's not going to impact us monetarily. I say, forget the money, forget goodwill, forget everything. Protect the citizenship. I don't care what my enemy thinks of me. I really couldn't give a darn what anybody thinks of me if I'm going to sit here and I'm going to stand and protect my community. I don't care what anyone else thinks of me. My intention is to save my people. And that should be the intention of every single Jewish community leader. Then who the heck cares what the Jew haters think of us? But alas, I stand alone. And I've stood alone for 30 years. I've been told I was crazy for saying these things. How dare I express these things openly? But it's the truth. And I can't speak anything but the reality that the way I see it. Now, I may not see everything clearly, but fine. I mean, we are all entitled to our opinions. But what I do see is a capitulation of Jewish leadership to allow these things to happen over and over and over again and not demand that something be done to stop them. I see a capitulation of world leadership. I always hear people trying to tell me that when people yell, kill you, they're just talking. It's just rhetoric. It's not real. And I heard that when they started yelling globalized intifada. I mean, I got onto this show right here when they started yelling globalized intifada. And I said, hey, listen, we have to understand what the intifada was. And we have to understand what globalized intifada means. And when we started seeing the globalization of the intifada, which is now in full swing, we still have Jews who are saying, hey, that's not exactly what's happening. Take off your rose-colored glasses, people. This is what's happening. This is the globalization of the intifada. This is the result of globalizing the intifada. 27 attacks on the Jewish community last week. 2 firebombings of synagogues, the shooting up of a school, the attack on a school bus. This is the globalization of the intifada. Indiscriminate, random attacks on the Jewish community. The goal of these random, individualized attacks on the Jewish community is to scare the Jewish community, is to terrorize the Jewish community. Every single person who perpetrates these attacks should be tried under the respective country's terrorism legislation. And great punishment should be meted out to these people. But we know that's just a pipe dream. We know that's never going to happen. And that's really where we're at right now. And it's such a shame. It is a complete shame that countries that had welcomed Jews for centuries are now rejecting the Jews that live there. Now, we could look at the causes of this because it's all cause and effect. So we could look at the causes of this and what the effects are. We could look at immigration policies of We can look at the immigration policies of different countries and see that they brought in immigrants from countries that hate Jews, intentionally in some cases, because of language, because of the language they speak, or because of some economic dividend that came to that country. And we could look and watch how these people who came in have affected the way these countries perceive their Jewish populations. That would be a much, much longer show, which I don't want to put on right now. But maybe one day I'll do that. We could take a look at the socioeconomic situation of different countries, and we could understand how bringing people in from Saudi Arabia and Iran and Iraq at the time would have increased the socioeconomic balance of populations. We could do all that. But when we have politicians, and this is the majority of politicians in the world, who can't get up and say, I am abhorred by this attack on the Jewish community, without throwing in, and I'm also abhorred by attacks on Islam, or put in Islamophobia is also bad, then we know we have a problem. Because the two are not related. Yet they're always put together. They're always combined. And for the life of me, I can't understand why. Well, I didn't understand why until October 7th of last year. Then I understood exactly why that happens. I understood exactly why politicians will never condemn just anti-Jewish attacks. They'll never get up and say, we support the Jewish community. I haven't heard a politician do that yet. A world leader. Haven't heard that yet. I'm still waiting. I might be surprised. Maybe this week. Maybe next week. You know, you always keep your hopes up. So where does that leave us now as the Jewish community? Where do we go from here? Well, it's quite simple. There's only one place to go. When we realize that our time in North America, our time in Europe, our time around the world has come to an end, and we have a Jewish state, choosing not to go to that Jewish state seems almost suicidal. And I think this is where we're at. I think we're at a time and a place where all Jews should consider filling out the forms and putting in their applications to move to Israel. Now, is Israel a safer country than the rest of the world? Probably not. I'm not going to pretend that Israel is a safer country to live in. But at least you have a Jewish army. At least you have Jews running the country, a Jewish army. And at least you can walk down the street in most parts of Israel and not have to look behind you and wonder if somebody's going to jump out and stab you. Terrorism in Israel has dropped substantially in the last two decades. And the army is very good at protecting the people. But at least you'd be living in your own country. You won't have people trying to push you out. People trying to tell you, it's not your time to be here anymore. It's time to leave. As we approach Hanukkah, we have to remember that the Maccabees fought to save Judaism. The Hanukkah is a celebration of Jewish military might. This is a celebration of the saving of Israel, the saving of Judaism, the saving of everything Jewish. And as we approach Hanukkah, which is coming up this week, we have to remember that we have to be the Maccabees of today. We have no choice. As Jews get attacked around the world, as the Jewish state gets maligned around the world, as Judaism ebbs away in North America and Europe, as people walk away from Judaism, we have to understand that you can never really walk away. Hitler proved that. We have to understand that other enemies that are going to rise and are going to kill us. In every generation, there's one or two that rise and kill us. Today, we don't have to be lambs to the slaughter. We have a choice. It's just a matter of making that choice and realizing that the choice exists and doing it. I hope that Jewish community leaders step up. I hope that people from the community, grassroots, get up and start saying enough is enough. We're not going to take this anymore. I hope that Jews start fighting back. 27 attacks on the Jewish community in one week is absolutely, it's absolutely terrifying. I'm hoping that next week we could get on here and we could talk. And we could talk about how the amount of attacks over the course of the week have dropped from 27 to 2. It'll never be zero. But 27, 30, 40, way too much in a week. Terrifying. Time to go to Israel. Time to go home. I'm Howie Silberger, this is Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Feel free to check out the website, israelnewstalkradio.com. Till next show, I'll see you. Thank you so much for joining me.